This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 348. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers. Joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
I think we successfully put off talking about this game for as long as possible, yeah?
Yeah, I hope people enjoy the fact that, after losses, we just record on Thursday, launch on Friday. That way, you know, we can try and still, I don't know, bring back the terrible emotions then right before the next game. Is that how this works?
I guess. And also, too, I mean, with work stuff, this happens to be the first day that I've been at home for a day. So there's that since the game, which makes it a little more difficult. Excuses.
Come on now. That's very practical that we could only record on this day being the soonest.
I'm just saying, it's going to be better the next few weeks because I booked out a little bit of time to be able to winterize the cabin the way that I want this year. And so I'll be here. It'll be a lot easier to sit down at the beginning of a week. And then plus, we all know the Seahawks are about to rip off 4 in a row. So we'll want to talk about it earlier.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the time now. So you don't sound like one of the people who are out on social media who are ready to blow up and fire everybody on this team, not named Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Dwayne Brown. I think that's the end of the list.
Well, look, here's the thing with all of that. I get it. I get where people are coming from. I really, really do. I understand. Now, there are going to be ebbs and flows in a season, and especially coming off a jarring year last year like we did. These sort of performances, especially when you string them back to back, are going to be like PTSD for us as fans. And it's really easy through 3 weeks to freak the hell out and overreact. But I mean, we got a lot of season coming up here. Are we in the best spot that we could be in? Absolutely not. Is the team playing as good a ball as it can? At times. Is it playing really terrible at times? Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we saw here again in the Vikings game. It was an annoying game, but I'm not ready to blow up everything. Now, as far as maybe changing things with Ken Norton, if you want to change out right now, great. If you don't, fine. I don't have a big opinion on that to this point.
You don't have an opinion on Ken Norton? Everybody has an opinion on Ken Norton right now.
Well, this is why I'm so weird. it's one of those things. Here's the thing. Are you evaluating Ken Norton on the good stuff or the bad stuff? Or are you doing a little of both? Because most people do one or the other. They don't take the full resume into account, the full history. I mean, yes, the defense was a dumpster fire for half the year. And then, yes, the defense was way better for half the year. And yes, the defense has played great for halves so far this year. And then played like a dumpster fire for halves. Like, so there is definitely a consistency issue. But obviously, he does know some things at work. And is it really his fault or is it Pete's fault? Or is it John Schneider's fault?
Could be John Schneider's fault. It could be the fault of the personnel. You know, if you hear guys talking after the game saying, we didn't have a good idea of where we were supposed to be on this particular play. You can put that on coaching or you could put it on the players for not knowing the scheme well enough. And, you know, maybe Ken Norton expects a lot from the players in terms of complexity of the scheme. And if they're not able to execute that, this is why preseason might actually matter a little bit. In that you can work out some of these things rather than working them out through the first three games of the season.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if veteran players ever get a preseason off again under Pete Carroll.
I wouldn't. So you have two data points for how a season starts after the veterans have a lot of time off. One was 4-0 and the other is so far 1-2.
It was 4-0, but 4-0 with the worst performing defense. Okay, so maybe the offense can take the preseason off. The defense is going to need the preseason.
Right. I don't think we can just tie it to that. To me, if I'm really looking at things, and especially over the last couple games with the Titans and the Vikings, one thing that stands out to me isn't necessarily the initial defensive game plan. It's halftime adjustments. Ken Norton has had his ass whipped for 2 weeks in a row and halftime adjustments, and they're the same halftime adjustments. Screen, 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 screen.
Bobby Wagner was saying this week, they're probably going to run tight end screens, wide receiver screens. They might even run some quarterback screens. with Trey Lance back there. Yeah, Bobby Wagner's expecting the screens in this game against the 49ers.
Well, and that would be smart because they are one of the more screen happy teams in the league. And it's one of the reasons why they drafted Jordan Brooks for a little more speed to help track those screens down. Now, that hasn't seemed to help to this point. Maybe we're missing KJ to be able to recognize those screens. That could be part of it too. But it was an interesting game against the Vikings. It started out hot. It felt like the offense was going to score every time it had the ball. And it almost did. And then it just all flipped.
All right. Well, before we get too deep into this, we do have to assign some blame. Or because before we start blaming certain players, I mean, I guess we already started blaming certain coaches. But before we start blaming anybody any further, you know, we got to take some accountability ourselves as fans. And so Levi from Adelaide, Australia came in, said, "Hey guys, my apologies for the performance this week. I am fully to blame for this. I'm not sure how best to explain it, but it's been consistent. In Australia, the games start early, and either I don't get up early enough for it, or it's on during work time. The Colts game was at 2:30 a.m. I chose sleep, and we won. The Titans started at 5:25 a.m. I woke up for it and had it playing while driving. Was only listening to it. We lost. This past week, I was able to watch and listen to the game, and we lost again. So I'm not sure what to do, guys. In Australia, we have a holiday on when we play the Niners. I'd love to watch it, but if I do, we will lose. I need to hear from you. Is it the fact my work is getting in the way of proper support for the Hawks, or is it something wrong with my Hawkra? Where and when I listen or watch the game, we lose. Either way, it's my fault we lost this week. And to all the 12s, I apologize. Take care and go Hawks."
Ah, go Hawks. Here's the thing. I thought about this a lot because I knew we'd get a lot of blame emails this week because we do. We want to try to take some responsibility for these performances. And at the end of the day, this game, it's not on us. It's not on us. None of us are to blame. I truly believe that. I mean, I busted my ass to get done early to be able to watch it. Changed hoodies, changed hats, did everything when things started going sideways just to try to, you know, shake things up. No difference. Only thing that our fellow down in Australia could have done is if he has, say, I don't know, coaching tips on how to stop a screen pass, maybe email them to the Seahawks. Maybe do that.
There you go. We did get some more email, not for taking blame, but just reaction to this game. And Bryson McCartney wrote in, says, "Here's a quick reaction. Do better vent for you guys. WTF. Dog
catfish
game plan. Dog
catfish
play calling. Dog
catfish
offense in general. Last but not least, dog
catfish
officiating to close out the game. Holy
catfish
king catfish. Do better." Looking forward to the next episode because we all probably need to hear some of the silver linings or positive takeaways after this blunder, if there are any. Thanks, gents, and go Hawks.
Go Hawks, man. Again, you kind of have to look at this through the tail of two halves. I mean, offensively anyways, because offensively, it was good for a half. It really was. DK was unstoppable. They ran the ball effectively. There was a good mix of play design. I like what was going on.
Yeah.
Now, defensively, it was bad from start to finish.
They made them punt one time.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah. In the Discord, I remember typing in like sometime in the third quarter. Does anybody know the name of the Viking punter? Because I don't.
I thought that they hadn't punted at all. But then when I went back and looked, oh, yes, they did have one drive where they had to punt.
Was that in the fourth quarter?
No, it was in the first, I think. That's why I forgot about it.
There was a lot of things. I mean, especially like in that first half, I mean, Amadi gets nailed with the pass interference. Oof. The holding, I guess.
Yeah, the holding.
That would have gotten him off the field, and he just had no reason to do it. No reason. The play wasn't going to that side, and I get they were putting the safety in conflict with two in-breaking routes or a receiver, you know, heading towards the safety on the other side of the field. And so Amadi was trying to slow that receiver down to give the safety time to work and see where the ball was going. So I understand what he was trying to do, but that was a killer right there. And it seemed like at that point, that's when the Vikings really found their legs offensively. And it was kind of all downhill from there.
Yeah. It's a bummer that that's how it turned. I don't think I would put, you know, obviously the entire defensive performance on Amadi making that one error, but it was,
oh heck no,
it was impactful though. And it's definitely something I think a lot of people recognize as a big turning point to where things just started to snowball downhill.
Now, in terms of the game plan, and I think this is where I kind of get a little more frustrated with the Seahawks right now. They're definitely still playing that. They're playing a prevent defense all freaking game. Like, it's really what it is.
It's not prevent in the traditional sense. It's just, it's allow everything underneath always. Like, as soon as you're recognizing that the offense is in a passing formation, you're immediately dropping back just to keep everything in front of you. Well, that's the zone. That's the type of zone defense that they're playing.
Yes. And I hate it. I hate it. I hate how far the corners play off. I mean, Reed's just as bad as Flowers when it comes to that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not getting a hand on a guy and disrupting routes. They're just letting everything happen underneath. And with Pete being terrified of explosives, like this is what they're doing. Oh, let's not give it up over the top. Okay, cool. Well, then let's give up a 10-minute drive where they're sure to score at the end anyways. And then your potent offense doesn't even get to see the ball except for once in the freaking third quarter. That's happened two games in a row now. Like, can we just stop with these bend but don't break, but it's just really bend and then break bad, and then you're still freaking down or your offense doesn't have a chance? Give up a few explosives and take some freaking risks. Get up on these receivers. Maybe you stop a drive by taking a risk or two instead of just letting them slowly carve you up and down the field and possess the ball for half the catfish game.
We know that holding teams away from explosives is important. But we also know that time of possession is important. And we also know from Pete Carroll that taking away the football is important. When you're playing that far off of the opposing players, you're not in position to get turnovers. And so that is probably one of my biggest issues, is that you can't have it be all about the ball and then have it also be no explosives.
I think we're on the exact same page. And like you're saying, in the passing game, for sure, with them backed off as far as they are on the regular, it makes it impossible for them to make a play on the ball. In the run game, you should still be able to create a turnover or two here and there.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not getting that either.
Yeah, the run defense in this game was particularly atrocious, even though Dalvin Cook wasn't out there, though I made a point to say Madison's pretty good. And yes, they struggled with that. I think that was one of the things I was most disappointed with, was their ability to stop him. They had their way with running the football the entire game. Screens, frustrating. I guess I wasn't as frustrated by the fact that, you know, both our corners were getting beat by Justin Jefferson, because he's really, really good. Adam Thielen had an okay game. I was more frustrated by the runs and the screens.
He's a hell of a receiver too.
Exactly.
Really, I was more frustrated with the screens, but doesn't much matter, because either way, it was bad. And it's exactly how the Titans beat us in the second half. Run the ball, run screens. I mean, the book's out at this point, right? Do that. The defense is going to let you take it. And then you'll eventually at least get a field goal out of the thing and put the pressure back on the offense that's been sitting there, has gotten cold and out of rhythm, and keep Russ off the field.
And that's why I don't put anything on Russ so much in this last game, because a lot of people are saying, oh, well, because of what we've seen these last couple weeks, it looks like the offense is bad at making second half adjustments. And that's the reason why we saw the performance we did from the offense. But the offense, they never got a chance to be on the field. And by the time they did, as soon as they started moving the ball, you had the Tyler Lockett injury. And then that just seemed to take the entire wind out of the team. Russ just misses on a pass where he was getting a ton of pressure up the middle. No, that was, I might be confusing the third quarter drive with the first drive of the fourth quarter. But because it was that first drive of the fourth quarter when Russ missed that pass, and they decided to punt on 4th and 7 right about midfield.
Yeah. That was tough to watch. I mean, 4th and 7, when you get to that distance, you know, anything over about 4 yards, it gets a lot dicier. There's no doubt.
You're down 10, though.
Exactly. And in that situation, I would have
liked to see them be. And the defense was just allowing them to run up and down the field. Now, I guess You could say, well, at least they held them to only field goals, those first two possessions of the Vikings in the second half. But the defense wasn't doing anything.
It wasn't. So why put your faith in them? You're 100% right.
And if you are putting your faith in them, put your faith in them to get a stop if you miss on fourth down.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. And maybe that's conversely the thing is like, well, if we give it up here, like that's definitely a score. Well, it's definitely a score either way. You just do it with less time. If you give it to them with the shorter field, I mean, they're scoring every time right now. So I just.
Yeah. Have it be quickly and then get your defense off the field. So they aren't gassed for the entire last half of the football game.
And I know this is not the way Pete wants to play football. I know it's not. I know it's not. But at some point, you also have to adapt to the team that you have. I mean, defensively, with the personnel that they have, they should be at least a mediocre defense.
They should be.
Like, they should be. But they're not right now. Well, at least in the last game. Because I guess one of the things, we have a 3-game sample size. Are they as good, this team, as week one? Or are they as bad as week three? It's probably neither.
The Colts probably aren't as good as people were making them out to be early on the season.
Sure. But then they also beat up on the Titans for a half.
Yeah. Okay. It's hard to do that, to try and play that game with the way things have gone through the first 3 weeks. I don't know if we have enough sample to
know. That's why I'm not freaking out yet.
Okay.
That's why I wasn't having like a full-fledged meltdown. I hate this team. Can't stand any of this shit. Just to fire everybody, da 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 da.
I can get to that point. Give me a couple weeks, a couple more weeks of losses against divisional teams, and I'm going to be moving that way.
And look, that's very much in range. That's very much in range if they don't right the ship right now. And I think a lot of that, especially defensively, we need to get more out of Jamal Adams right now. Oh. I mean, for what we signed him for and everything through the first 3 weeks of this season, being the defensive weapon that he is, we need more. And teams are game planning against him. I mean, you see him bring him on the outside blitzes and things like that, and they've got a plan for him. And he's been very close. Don't get me wrong on those rushes and everything, but
there were a couple of those plays where it was like, how did Kirk get rid of that the way he did and complete a pass? Yeah. Like they were so close on a couple plays. And I know what you mean about Adams, and I think Ethan in South Dakota is getting at this too, says, that first round pick would be nice right about now. This team pisses me off. Thanks for all the hard work, guys. Go Hawks.
I hear you. And you start thinking about that first round pick for this year, right?
And then you think about, whatever happens, it's going to the Jets.
Yeah. What happens if it's a top 10 pick? Now you're hurting. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think that's where this is going to go. This season has ups and downs and a lot of crazy ebbs and flows, right? And I'm in my gut, looking at the Niners game, and not that I want to get there yet, like I feel like there's a strong chance that they win this game.
I feel pretty good about this game. We will get there. We've got some more email to get to. David in New Jersey says, I hate facing this every season since Pete came in. I'm grateful for everything we've been able to enjoy since then. I love Pete. I love Russell. I love John. But the Seahawks are officially the F around and find out team. Constantly effing around, constantly finding out. I'm not even frustrated anymore. I'm just resigned to it. Oh, well, go Hawks.
It's the consistency aspect of it that is just absolutely maddening, because they have moments of looking like a juggernaut on both sides of the ball and then moments of looking just utterly terrible on both sides of the ball.
Well, they've seemed to fix one thing about the Seahawks team that I've taken issue with in the past, because they've been scoring in the first half. The tempo looks good. The fact that they're putting up points before halftime in the way that they are, and I think even DVOA-wise, I think they're among the top in the league up there with the Rams, at least top three, top five. So Shane Waldron, so far, things have been looking up. But they haven't found that way, I think, to put both sides of the ball together. So I am happy about the offense, though.
Yeah, I'm encouraged about the offense. And I think that is something that can get there, especially as Waldron learns the personnel a little bit, especially with the return of Eskridge. I think that's going to be a big deal, especially with Tyler having his injury and not knowing how much that may slow him down for a little while.
He was out there. He was back out there running full speed in the fourth.
I'm not saying he's not going to play, but you don't know. Maybe did that knock 10% off,
yeah.
You know, or is he just fine? We don't know that answer right. yet, but I think getting him back would be good. I like what I'm seeing out of Carson. I mean, I don't know what else you can ask of him. He's doing all the things.
Call more plays for him, maybe.
Maybe that's it. You know, I haven't hated the mix. I haven't hated it. And I'd be more of a run heavy kind of guy for sure. And I'm still not bothered by the volume of passing at this point.
There is one thing about the offense that I am hating, though. I don't want to see this team run any more screens. Because I thought maybe it was Russell who was just bad at throwing them. But the offensive line has been bad at setting them up, too. I don't want to see any more screens. The screen game against the Vikings was terrible.
It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating to get screened to death and then not be able to run a couple yourselves when they were in advantageous situations. Like, they should have popped.
Yeah.
They should have popped. And yet somehow just like they one get of the guys
all the,
misses.
All the blockers lined up right in the right way and they just miss one guy and it blows up the entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just unbelievably and
it's consistently happened that way. It was so frustrating.
So I guess maybe that would be a place to emphasize and practice both offensively and defensively.
On defense, you mentioned this name with regard to the screen game. You know, as much hate as Trey Flowers is getting with regard to his coverage, I think Jordan Brooks is getting overlooked at how terrible he's been in coverage.
Wasn't his strong suit coming out of college?
Well, they said that about him in his final year of college, but going back to his earlier years, they were saying, well, he was pretty decent. So now, I don't know.
The one touchdown that was thrown on him, it's not like he was completely out of position. It was a good route and a good ball.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about the touchdown so much as just some of the third down pickups where they were, you know, they specifically designed plays to target his area and he wasn't even anywhere close.
Yeah, definitely an area to clean up. And with the secondary struggling as much as they are, I mean, you're going to need the linebackers to play at a high level as well. There's no doubt about it. And Bobby is. I mean, Bobby's still showing up. He's doing his thing. That's for sure. The defensive line had spurts where they were getting pressure on Cousins. It just was a hair late. Cousins had a great game. I mean, he really did. It's because he had so many gimmies because of how far off Reed and Flowers play.
I would like to see maybe more consistency with the defensive line rotation because just looking at snap counts and watching how things have been going, I don't get a good sense that they have that worked out to where they can get the most out of, you know, we were all excited about the depth and we did see some injuries in this game. So that had an impact to it too. Benson Mayo going down, Kerry Hyder going down in these past couple of weeks. So gosh, if we could see some consistency and a good rotation, I think that would benefit this team a lot.
And that is going to take time to come into a place. There's no doubt about it. You're experimenting with a lot of different dudes. It's not like you're just rotating a couple guys in and out. I mean, it's kind of a full line shift. It's going to take some time to figure that out. That I'm not quite as worried about. I think that will come. It is frustrating to see the pass rush struggle, though, for long stretches when Dunlap is out there, because it did seem like that just unlocked everything last year.
Well, and that's what I mean. It was the last game against the Titans where he was, I think he played fewer than 25% of the snaps against the Titans. Whereas it was flip-flop, like Mayoa was playing all kinds of snaps.
Maybe you're saving him. I don't know.
It could be. I'm having trouble understanding that part of it. So that's where that question comes from in my mind. But
yeah.
Let's see, penalties. I think we did have some people point out about the potential pass interference on that fourth down deep throw to Penny Hart.
Yeah, maybe.
Harrison Smith maybe got there a little early.
Maybe a smidge. Again, these are all, I'm not going to sit here and whine about penalties one iota about in this game. I'm just not.
Right.
The defense was a train wreck the entire game. We did not lose because of
even
penalties.
If you score there. Yeah, you're giving the ball back to the Vikings with 2:30 left, and you're hoping for...
And you're not going to see the ball.
Well, they did see the ball at the very end, but it was on the 1-yard line.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the, oh, was that the only punt of the game? I thought there was only one punt, but maybe that was the, maybe there were two punts. Man, I'd sure like to see Dixon do that in an actual game rather than in the preseason. I think we saw that once in the preseason.
We did. We did. And it's a law of averages. I mean, I have confidence that Dixon's going to be pinning some dudes with some regularity coming up. He's had a few bounce into the end zone. It's going to happen. I mean, it's a little bit of luck of the bounce, too.
Well, Kevin, our executive producer, emailed in a couple of things that we touched on already. We addressed on whether or not it's time to fire anybody, because he brought up the idea of, you know, having Pete fire his quote unquote USC buddy. And that's part of the thing. There's a long history between Pete and Ken Norton Jr. So to have that expectation that he's going to make the change, and a change that would have consequences on Ken Norton Jr.'s career going forward, I don't think you do that to somebody that's that close. Now, you might change how you might take a little bit more control over the situation defensively if you're Pete Carroll, but I don't think you're going to see them making any big personnel changes like that this season.
It's an interesting theory, and you would think that maybe Pete would adjust that way before firing, and maybe that's what's happening this week, but we're a week or maybe 2 weeks of really poor defensive showings away from this being a firing situation.
It could be justified by Pete because two seasons to where they get off to a start of being historically on pace for the worst defense in the NFL. I wouldn't be all too happy about that.
No, especially when the offense is, for the most part, holding up their end of the bargain.
One other question that Kevin brought up is the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era in Seattle over. I love both of these guys, but they are seeming to have trouble evolving with the rest of the league. They hit it big in the early years, drafting Russell, picking up Baldwin, and constructing the Legion of Boom. But now, with a bigger sample size, was that skill or luck? The moment they traded away Max Unger, everything seemed to start going downhill. They can't make a first-round pick to save their life, and we can all agree they need to stop trying to turn basketball players into football players.
Well, I think Kevin's right on that. And I think they have actually changed their mentality on that a bit.
I don't know. No, I think they have not... some tight ends on the practice squad that they pulled off of college basketball teams.
That's fine. I don't care.
Yeah, that's development of.
Those are giant swings, and they're most often going to be misses. No doubt about it. And that's fine. I don't care about that. Now, as far as it being the end of John Schneider and Pete's tenure, no, not even close. They just re-upped like a year ago. So if you think that that's going to be the case, it's not. And it would take 2 years of monumental disaster, like miss the playoffs by a lot, for it to be over.
You think it would take 2 years of that, or would it take 1 year?
Nope, two. Do you think Jody Allen is somebody who's super rash with this sort of stuff? She seems to be really hands off.
I'm just thinking, if it is a complete and utter disaster for this year, with everything that we dealt with last offseason, I'd have a hard time thinking that we could just make it through the offseason with no changes.
To Pete and John is what I'm saying specifically. There might be other changes for sure, but Pete and John are not going anywhere. And not only that, but do I think the rest of the season is going to be a dumpster fire and a disaster? I don't. And I know it's easy to get really spun up about it right now with, you know, the Cards, Niners, and Rams all, you know, playing better ball at the moment, to think that, oh, it's all over, where it's none of this is going to change. The season is long. It has huge ebbs and flows. And I think that there's a real opportunity here for this team to grow and be better. And I think Russ can be better too. And the offense can be better. If you're only going to get the one possession in the third quarter, which is what we've been seeing, then make the most of it. You can't go three and out. You're going to have to, you know, extend some of those drives. When the offense is sputtering and maybe not scoring, you at least need to flip the field, keep the other team off the field, let the defense rest. And I think that that is something that they can definitely do.
Well, it brings Kevin to some final thoughts when we're talking special teams, flipping the field. It says, where is the special teams? DJ Dallas is not the answer to return kicks. What's up with all the mental mistakes? Oh, you want to address that right now?
Well, look, I've been saying it since the beginning of the season. The return game has been abysmal. It's been abysmal. We don't have a home run hitter at all.
Fortunately, Trey Brown could be coming off of IR, not this week, but next week. So mm-hmm. that could give you a little bit of a boost. We saw some nice things from him in the preseason. So maybe.
And we're sure Amadi's not better. He was a hell of a returner in college.
Yeah, that's weird that he hasn't been given that opportunity and that he's that far down on the depth chart. Huh.
And we can't put Eskridge back there?
Well, he'll be back on the field this week, at least, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, but we can't have him returning punts?
I don't know. Seems like he should be able to do it. He's got the speed.
Yeah. But the special teams overall have been pretty good. I mean, in terms of coverage and the kicking game and all that, they've been pretty good.
Oh, speaking of guys with speed, Adam, did you see who's back? Did you see who's back on the roster?
No.
Philip Dorsett, signed to the practice squad for the Seahawks.
Interesting. You never know. I'm actually intrigued by that. I like that move better than, say, bringing back Josh Gordon.
I don't know. I would have been fine with Gordon coming back. He's going to the Chiefs now.
No. And here's why.
We've been burned too many times by Josh Gordon.
No, this is just the way football works. So remember that guy named Michael Vick? Remember that guy? Have you heard of him?
Yeah, I'm aware of Michael Vick.
Yeah. Yeah, remember how he was basically unstoppable with the Falcons and then committed a massive felony and went to prison for like 2 years?
Yeah, it impacted his game a little bit. He was good though the first year back.
For a year. And then he was never the same. You get too far away from the game and you're never able to come back. And we're definitely at that point with Josh Gordon. So no thanks. I don't need that at all.
Do you think Richard Sherman's been away from the game too long?
No, I don't. I really don't. And this is so unbelievably maddening that it seemed like it was half-hearted to bring him back. And I think that all goes to, if this team continues to struggle, like Sherm popping off against Russ and, you know, that would tear up the locker room again, and Pete just doesn't want to have it. I genuinely think that's what it all is.
That would be so weird for that to be the fear, because what we saw from Sherman in San Francisco, I was talking to Stats from Niners Nation this week, and they call him Uncle Sherman because like he was like always had praise, always talking, you know, helping the young guys. A very different Richard Sherman personality in San Francisco than when he was in Seattle.
Absolutely. It's something you definitely noticed. And it was definitely something that you kind of took note of and was like, oh, I think he learned on his exit out of Seattle that if you're going to be divisive that way, it hurts the team. I think he learned that.
I think so too.
And that's a veteran thing to learn. And I think he would have been fine. And it's just so frustrating to see him go to the freaking Bucks.
I think Bobby Wagner was frustrated about it too, with his comments in the press conference this week. Like, he sounded like he thought Sherman was coming back to the team, like that it just made sense and it was going to happen when it was time for it to happen. And then all of a sudden he's going to the Bucks and you're seeing some tweets that, oh, they tried to call him and tell him not to get on the plane. And you know, it was too late then, which I don't know. It seems a little overdramatic that maybe they're playing it up in the way that they did, because it seemed to get more and more dramatic as more and more news reports came out. But it is frustrating that we have a need. And they didn't fill a need with the obvious guy to fill that need.
Couldn't we have signed him and just had him under contract and have him not suit up for a few more weeks if he needed a few more weeks to continue to get well?
He doesn't need weeks. Maybe he's going right in Tampa.
Well, if the Seahawks believed it, let's say that's what they believe.
Sure.
Then why don't you do that then? Like, who you're going to get that's better out there right now? There's no other cavalry out in the ether that you can just pull in that would potentially make a difference. And you're telling me Richard Sherman, even at this stage in his career, isn't an upgrade over Flowers or Reed?
It's got to be an upgrade over at least one of them.
Absolutely. And not only that, just him helping teach. I mean, you'd think it would be a massive advantage. And that swagger he brings with it too. I'm extremely bummed out that didn't happen. I know there's a lot of people out there, other 12s that are just like, that's fine. I wanted no part of Sherman, da 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 da. And I've heard it and I get it, but I think he still had something to offer us.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting the Sherman that was on the way out the door. That, and so if you're thinking about it in terms of a personality standpoint, I don't think that was a concern, at least for me. And no. I don't think it would have been a bad chemistry thing on the defensive side of the ball. So I guess the other guys who are out there, I suppose there's still Stephon Gilmore, but you're talking about having to give up draft capital then. And I would rather just have a guy that you can sign. And it's not like Sherman was getting, what is it? Like 2.25, 2.5 max?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nothing.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I don't get it.
Frustrated by that. And because it has been clear that that's been one of the biggest weaknesses so far.
Yeah. And it's trending in the wrong direction too. Like it's literally going the other way.
Yeah, the best you can hope for at this point is that Trey Brown and Sidney Jones are competing their butts off and they end up being one of those guys. But still, I as good as they can be, at least, you know, Sidney Jones is a veteran. Trey Brown, you know, he could show you something, but still, for the price for sure, but that it would have been an obvious difference. And yes, okay, he's had some injury history too. So if you get 6 or 7 games out of him, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he can help you win. And then not only that, but the writers and stuff on Seahawks Twitter. Well, I mean, they just need to get Sidney Jones in there. Like, where's Sidney Jones? Oh, the system's too complex for Sidney Jones. Sidney Jones on his white horse will come and save the day. Like, what are we talking about?
Well, I saw some frustration.
He's a fringe starter in this league. Yeah.
Well, I saw some of the frustration, too, online about C.J. Henderson being picked up by the Panthers because Horn goes down. Their rookie corner, they make a 3rd-round pick trade for C.J. Henderson with the Jaguars. You want to give a third-round pick for a guy that, again, has been a fringe starter? Jacksonville, they're not giving away good corners to everybody. No. Like, okay, they're a bad team, but bad teams, they don't give away good corners.
They really don't. So, yeah, would he have been an upgrade? Possibly. But, yeah, that's not what I'm going to wring my hands over.
It's not worth risking a 3rd-round pick to me.
No, not at this point, especially 6th. Yeah.
7th, okay. Maybe 5th. I don't even know about a 5th.
Yeah. With the draft capital that you have going forward, no, you don't have a lot of wiggle room to make a trade that involves like a 3rd up.
Yeah, you want to use that 5th to get Stephon Gilmore.
Sure. Sure. Can anybody get Bill O'Brien to take over for Bill Belichick and then make that trade for us?
We just need Bill O'Brien manning the phone for one day up in New England.
Yeah, we'd be good to go. So no Sherm.
Well, that tangent got us away from Kevin's email, but appreciate our executive producer coming in and giving us some things to talk about. Speaking of Sherm and his former team, mm-hmm. 49ers coming up.
Yeah. Tough to say must win this early in the season, but it certainly feels that way.
Especially with the Rams on a short week the next week. You must win one of these next two games.
You have to.
I suppose you could survive it. I don't really want to talk about that at this point. But you could survive having a bad first half of the season going into the bye week and then just kicking ass the rest of the way.
Look, as inconsistent as this team is, I can't fathom them losing 3-4 games in a row. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, Russell Wilson's not going to let that happen.
Yeah, there's no freaking way. There's no freaking way.
I don't think he has never allowed 3 losses in a row to happen. And he never loses, or he rarely loses to the 49ers.
Exactly. And then there's that as well. Now, he had a great record against the Vikings going into this last game. So that is what it is. But when you look at this matchup, though, the Niners, they've been in a bunch of close games. And their team has been very similar to ours. For the first 3 weeks of the season, they've had a lot of up and down play, you know, whether that's their defense, like coming unraveled against the Lions and giving up a big lead, the offense has sputtered at times. I mean, shoot, they struggled with the Eagles 2 weeks ago.
First halves for that 49ers offense have been abysmal. And so that is that I do like that part of it. What we've seen from the Seahawks offense in first halves and what we haven't seen from the 49ers in first halves, like, if that can stay true in this 4th game, I feel like taking a lead again into the third and fourth quarter against this team would be a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy's been Jimmy throughout the first three games of the year. He looks just like he always does. And it's the same thing as always. You get a little pressure on him and he unravels. He absolutely unravels. And the big difference being is they bring in Trey Lance for the goal line stuff and all that. And that's fine. I mean, it's a fairly limited package. It's a lot of read option stuff and all that. You should be able to prepare for that. I don't think that's one of those crazy Shanahan wrinkles that are going to be impossible to deal with. But I do worry mightily about the screen game against the Niners because Shanahan is really good at dialing those up. And especially if he's getting Kittle involved that way. I mean, that's the big deal to me. Juszczyk and Kittle, man. Like, to me, if I'm preparing for that Niners passing game, it's all about those two guys.
Yeah. And it's all about those short underneath passes. And so to be able to keep those in front of you, that won't be hard. But at the same time, that's kind of what would allow the 49ers to run wild on this defense is if you just allow all of the underneath stuff, because that's what they're wanting to do anyway.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that has me a little bit concerned going into this game is that what you saw from the Packers, you saw pretty good quarters of them holding Jimmy Garoppolo from moving the ball down the field all that well. And then as soon as they started playing back and just allowing the short stuff, that's when Jimmy just moved the ball right down the field. So it's going to frustrate me if we see that from the defense again this week, especially considering the team.
It's super simplistic, and I know that you don't tune into a podcast to hear just like something that's Captain Obvious, but it really is as simple as they got to play up on all these guys and take all that underneath stuff away. Like, quit being afraid of the long ball. I mean, if Jimmy gets you with a couple of those, then he gets you with a couple of those, and then, you know, if you lose, you lose. But I'd rather go down that way than watching us die by 1,000 cuts and not giving Russ a chance to get us back into the games and get us into a rhythm and use the stars that we do have on offense. That is the stronger side of the football for us this year. Let's play to its strengths.
Play to the strength. Get the win down in Santa Clara. Stop messing around. Let's get this back on track.
Absolutely. And look, you watch the Vikings defensive line this last week, and they got some pressure on Russ, no doubt about it. But the offensive line did okay. They did okay against a pretty good defensive line. They can do okay against the Niners.
Especially considering they had their third string right tackle out there. Mm-hmm. You know, really, I think Dwayne Brown was the one who got charged with the two sacks in this last game with going up against Danielle Hunter.
He got moved over to right tackle a few times too, especially early in the game.
I saw that early on in the game. I think that was just a formation that they were using to run to the right side with Chris Carson. Cause I think they had either Everett or Disley lined up at left tackle when they had him over on the right side. So it was kind of him being in the tight end position even.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a neat little wrinkle to play it.
It is. So I would definitely like to see the Seahawks win time of possession in this game. I just think that's going to be so critical to this sieve of a defense is just, if you're going to help them out, like keep the other offense off the field and you're going to have to be stringing together drives.
And get a turnover for once.
Yeah.
Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback. This is a guy who is prone to turning over the football in really random situations.
And he's been pretty decent as far as protecting the football for 3 weeks here. It's about time for him to unravel. That's usually what happens.
Yeah, they get that last second loss to the Packers. Would you rather have them undefeated going into this game, or do you think it's better coming off a loss?
I don't think it much matters.
I want to know if it matters. The psychology of how teams feel coming off of losses is important to me.
It's hard telling not knowing. How about that?
All right. See, just looking at some injuries here going into this game. Tyler Lockett, it says he has a hip injury. So he didn't participate on Thursday. That's what he was listed as with being limited. I wonder if that tackle had took any kind of issue on his hip, but obviously he was holding his ankle and knee after that play.
You never really know.
Yeah.
Well, the ankle bone's connected to the knee bone and the knee bone's connected to the hip bone. So
sounds like Rashad Penny's not going to play.
What?
Yeah, no, that's weird. And then Brandon Shell, ankle injury, still keeping him out. So, but Obwehi is supposed to be back this week.
We need one of the two of them, man. That's going to be very important.
Yeah. Curran seems fine. He's a rookie and he's undrafted, but they're super excited about him. I want to give him a little more time to develop. I'm glad he got in there and did all right. But I would like to see more of a veteran presence on the line, considering the defense that we're going up against.
Yes. Yeah. The front seven of that Niners defense is a real front seven. There's no doubt about it.
Another thing that plays well into the Seahawks game plan going in against the Niners. How many times did Rodgers just drop back and uncork one, and the receivers just flying right by their defensive backs and picking up huge gains? Like Rodgers didn't even have to make anybody miss. He just dropped back seven steps, uncork it, and you know they're getting 40, 50 yard gains.
Well, the secondary is the weak link of the 49ers defense. And yeah, you should be able to put up some bombs. We should have been able to do that against the Vikings.
It looked like they were going to be able to do that after the first half with the way DK Metcalf was moving around the field.
Heck yeah. They had no answers for him. Till they did, I guess.
Right. Okay, I don't even really know how to gauge the offense in the second half of that game just because of how little time they had the ball. And by the time that they did have a chance, they were down two scores. And so it threw the whole game plan out the window at that point.
Yeah. It's really, really difficult to evaluate it because
and then penalties and sacks, you know, putting them in really bad situations.
Can't fall out of rhythm.
They were completely out of rhythm by that point. All right. I feel like we've had an okay rhythm here through the first half of the show. What do you say we get to the second half?
Yeah, that's good enough. We're both tired and we didn't want to do this anyway. So yeah, I think we did good.
What do you mean we didn't want to do this anyways?
I don't think either of us had a high energy for this show today. Let's put it that way.
Are we starting the second half?
Yeah, that's the way we started the second half. Just like that. What do you mean we didn't want to do this anyway? Well, I mean, I didn't not want to do it. I wasn't fired up to do it. How about that? Is that better?
Yeah. Well, when you have a performance like that, it's not all that exciting to talk about. Just a domination by a team like the Vikings in the second half. It's frustrating.
It is. It's very frustrating, especially to see it kind of work that way for 2 weeks in a row.
Frustrating when you see the Rams just tearing it up and getting the wins.
Yeah, I kind of was poo-pooing the first couple Rams games because they definitely are missing a running game. I still don't believe that defense is as consistent or as good as it's been in the past, but they put together a pretty solid game against Tampa, and Tampa's no joke.
Tampa is no joke, and they win.
But it is Tampa early instead of Tampa late.
There we go. And now they got to take on the Cardinals.
Yeah, the first, their first division game, no doubt about it. And I mean, everybody's already figured out the Kyler Murray thing for this year, which is the same as every year.
No,
and
he's future MVP Kyler Murray.
Oh, okay.
A lot of MVP talk going around him.
Neat. It's also week three.
Yeah, I don't see that holding up either.
No.
Well, the Cardinals, watching them against the Jags, the way that started, man, I thought the Jaguars might be able to pull it off. And then the Cardinals pulled away in the end once the Jaguars showed that they were the Jaguars. But I did think that the Cardinals were going to screw that up.
Yeah. I mean, he had the sense that Tampa was in it there early still, and the Cards went down early, and you kind of said, oh, maybe the rest of the league will help us out, you know, this week the way that it didn't last week. Nope.
Only the Packers. Only them were, and the way that game ended, holy smokes. 30 seconds left on the clock, and Rodgers is able to move down the field, get him in field goal position, and then to kick the game-winning kick. A wild ending.
Yeah, a very wild ending. No doubt about it.
And that play, too, that throw to Adams to get him downfield, like right over the fingertips of Fred Warner.
Yeah.
Thanks, Packers. We did need that one. Although, like I said,
we did.
I'm going to stick with my original position. It's better for the 49ers to lose anytime.
Every time for life.
Yeah, I'm just having a hard time deciding who exactly I want to win. I suppose it would be better for our deal if the Cardinals won against the Rams.
I would think so.
Okay. I'm trying to work out who to root for in that game because it's hard.
Just, it's always not the Rams.
So what do you do when the Rams and the 49ers play?
You root for the Niners.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't feel good, but
I really don't even like hearing you say that.
Well, okay. How about for a tie?
Yeah, I don't really like rooting for ties either.
No.
I've been a part of that. I know the feeling.
It's better than the Niners, isn't it, though?
I just want definitive answers. Who's better and who's not?
Well, you're not going to get any at this point in the season, Brandon. We're still in the malaise of, well, still not sure with a lot of these teams. Remember how Josh Allen was the worst quarterback and he'd regressed in week one and then comes back and tears people up last week and now he's great again? Like, it's all that sort of stuff.
And Jameis Winston after week one, like his career was resurrected right under Sean Payton. And, you know, here he comes. He's going to wreck the league.
Yeah, exactly.
How the Seahawks are going 17-0. Damn. Don't talk about that.
Yeah.
You know what I do want to talk about? Our members of the flock.
No, that'll work.
Shout out to our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, Kevin Watterson, and Jake Burdine. Also, thanks. And I want to recognize our September executive producers, even though this will probably come out the first day of October, but a big thanks to those of you who supported the show, came in at the annual donations for the year in September. And so thanks to Pepper, Brian, John, Dan, Jeff, and Julio.
What a fine crew of individuals.
Fine crew. We got some more people joining the crew. John Doe came in. I don't know if this is a made up name or not, but John Doe came in at $3 a month. So welcome to the flock to John.
Hey, man, there's lots of the Doe family around and they all tend to name their kids John for whatever reason. So I think it's totally real.
Mike Meskel came in at $12 a month and he wanted to let us know he's in Camas, but he recognizes himself as in the Portland area. So close enough. But Mike says, gentlemen, we have a problem. You may remember that I emailed in 2 weeks ago with the dilemma of missing game one because I overcommitted myself to church functions. Then we won, and I was worried that I wasn't allowed to watch games anymore. Adam said that at first it is coincidence, the second time is a trend, and the third time is a me problem. Well, so far, we've only won games I missed. Since we are three games into this pattern, I think this goes back to how you started off the show, though, too. It is obviously partially my fault. I won't accept full responsibility since clearly the players on the field had something to do with it, but I had to have been part of this. I just made a donation on Patreon to get in the flock. I've far stayed past the grace period and have been a freeloader for years now. In fact, the first year I started listening, we lost the Super Bowl. So clearly not contributing more than downloads and positive reviews has damaged my chakra and had a negative impact on the team. I'm hoping that this donation will cleanse my chakra. I benched Dalvin Cook on my fantasy team before he was ruled out, so I know that at least I didn't further contribute to my poor chakra. My fantasy team shat the bed yesterday, so pissed off that the fantasy gods somehow, but that is beyond the scope of this podcast. The question is about going forward. I can turn my phone on airplane mode so my catfish friends don't ruin the game for me, and I can watch the game later. Is this necessary if I donated to cleanse my chakra? Can I just watch on delay so not seeing it live? Or do I have to wait until the game is over? Thanks for your guidance.
Catfish!
The Rams.
Catfish!
The Vikings. Go Hawks.
All right, Mike. As we addressed earlier in the podcast, are you in the locker room at halftime? Because if you're not making those adjustments, then it's not your fault. So, Brandon, what I'm going to need you to do is go and clip Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting. And the scene where he's finally breaking down Matt Damon.
Yeah, it's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Not your fault.
It's not your fault, Chief. It's not your fault.
It is not your fault, Mike.
It's not your fault.
New tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff coming up in the start of the month. So watch for that giveaway up at the Patreon feed, getintheflock.com. I'm going to be announcing a winner here at the start of October. And a new tiny pieces of stuff. I haven't picked it yet, but I'll put it out in the video.
Awesome, man.
Pick 'em update. We've got Liam Carey-Eves with 14 correct picks in the Pick 'em League for week 3. Oh, and it is a beautiful thing. I scrolled just to check, because after losing two straight games, you start to check everywhere just to make sure everything's cool. I went to the Pick 'em and I scrolled down the list. Everybody picked those games properly. So I'm really proud. I'm really proud of our community for appropriately picking in the Pick'em League.
We have very few rules, and that's one of them. We have very few rules about this podcast as a whole. Like, I mean, we give you a freeloader time period recommendation, but it's not a rule.
No.
Like, you don't have to not be a freeloader. Like, there's very few rules, and one of them is don't pick against the Seahawks, and I'm glad that you guys are, you know, following that rule, because that has been a struggle in seasons past.
It has. Even in good seasons. So, yeah, you have those games where, oh, it looks like the Rams are doing really well. I kind of want to pick them, but no. People doing the right thing. So, Liam Carey-Eves with the win and 14 picks correct. I'm going to start emailing people who deserve prizes for those for winning those weeks. And recognition for those of you who got 13 picks correct. You got Peaceful Easily Feeling, Hugh Hunter, Let Russ Simmer, Still Dangerous, Your Puna Ford Dealer, Aaron Sweet, and P-Heart Shaped Box.
I definitely like the Let Russ Simmer. I enjoyed that one.
Looking at the top scorers overall in the top three, Peaceful Easily Feeling leading our Pick'em League right now. Hard Telling Not Knowing in at number two.
What? Dude, every time. You can't not sing it every time.
Because you've got a peaceful, easily feeling.
Man, we can harmonize like badass mother
catfish.
We're good at this.
Yeah, we should start our music podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Hard Telling. You know what? I kind of want a peaceful, easily feeling. Like, can we get somebody to sing that?
Yeah,
like a parody song.
I know we have some very talented little flockers. So
yeah,
yeah. There's some homework.
Here we go. Usually I contract that out, but I bet we have somebody listening right now that could make that happen.
Yeah, you could just record it on your phone and send it. It's totally good enough. It doesn't have to be, like, you know, Broadway quality. It can even be bad. If you can get like a couple people together and like do it badly, like for fun, I'm in on that too.
Well, one of those musically talented people is in third place, Christopher Hart, along with yes. Honey Hole Hawk, Hurricane Seahawks, Mark Dolphin, and Tunbridge Hawk.
Congratulations to them. You guys are all Pick'em Masters, apparently. So good for you.
Getting into some email. The Bard writes in, says, "Hi, fellas. A bit controversial this week. I missed the deadline for the show because I was depressed and hated football. I listened to the show hoping for inspiration and heard all the reasons. Then it occurred to me, it's your fault. You are wondering what you did, then I'm sure. Well, you have had a meeting of all the little flockers is the answer. Would we have come? You bet. However, you had a meetup knowing that Barry and I are not allowed into the country. Or Bloomy too, I suspect. We feel left out and marginalized, but Barry is used to this being a football team man. So, all us overseas fans sat watching knowing we weren't invited and wondering why you were wondering they lost. So, is there a meetup this week? No. We'll win then. Go figure it out. Your reply will be interesting. Go Hawks." From John.
Well, I like how John like throws out there that they're not allowed in the country as if that's like a corona thing or something. Like that's on a person by person basis, man. Yeah. Like, so yeah. And especially Barry, they're not letting Barry in. I mean, he's Barry, the football team guy. It doesn't have the same ring as it used to.
No, but, no. The BFT. No. That's the BFT has a ring,
the
though.
BFT. Now we're talking. Yeah. So the BFT out. Like, we can't have that kind of riffraff in this country. And Bloomy, yeah, he sold himself out when he went over to the other side there in Hong Kong.
I think he's planning on coming to Houston, though.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if they let him in. Because he's on, at least, we all know that Bloomy's on like 4 watch lists.
But he's really good at getting around the watch list, though. So I have confidence in
that. That's what's amazing about Bloomy. Yeah. And that's probably why he's on the watch list in the first place.
I think you did take some blame. Well, at least maybe not you took some blame. I suppose there was some blame because you did bring the Acid Queen, knowing that there was that potential.
Sure. Now, with that said, Brittany also did not watch or attend the last game, and it was even worse. So I'm having a hard time continuing blaming her there.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. After last week.
I mean, give me some time and I'll find a way. I mean, otherwise her head gets too big. So
Yeah, we need to figure out just what we can put her through, having come from the Bay Area. Wait, I didn't say that right. The Bay Area. Get it right.
There, now you hit it. The Bay Area. Does Brittany want to come on and respond to any of this talk this week? No, no guest spots, even though she had her ego inflated like way too big after her last guest spot because everybody loved her appearance.
Hey, there's been some talk about maybe her having, you know, regular appearances on the show.
No.
Yes.
No, I get called out. You just turned down an appearance. Don't yes me now. Yeah, you were just invited on. You declined. You're out now. You're out. It's going to be a long night for me.
Well, it might be a long night for Michael after this email that he sent our way, because he has some blame he wants to throw out. Michael in San Diego, Mr. Breakfast Man.
I was going to say, this better be breakfast related.
Let's get this out of the way first.
Catfish!
The Rams.
Catfish!
The Niners.
Catfish!
The Cardinals.
Catfish!
Tom Brady. Okay, now that we all feel a little better, thanks for putting out...
It was a good
catfish
list. It was a good
catfish
list.
It was very extensive.
Yeah.
Thanks for putting out the shows, even after such miserable performances as we've seen the past 2 weeks. None of us like the losses, but we all know you can't win them all. I'm not going to take the blame for this loss, as I did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Things I did for week two that resulted in a loss, I changed up in order to cleanse my chakra and try something different to prepare for week three. Clearly that didn't work. I am, however, going to assign some blame. I'm going to throw my fabulous and amazing life / breakfast partner under the bus.
Oh no.
I've already written in saying that we've not won a Super Bowl since I started dating her. And now there's this situation. What happened? Well, she was home for week one and breakfast was great. We've been together for 7 years, and as we all know, sometimes breakfast can become a little mundane, a little regular. Mm-hmm. Throw some toast
scrambled
on a plate.
Eggs.
Maybe a bowl of oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
On a good day, maybe some scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
All nutritious, definitely enjoyable, but not necessarily amazing.
Mm.
Well, before the game one victory, we had breakfast, and we had something that we don't have very often. We had Eggs Benedict.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that's where he went with that. Yeah.
It was a pleasant surprise because it definitely takes a little bit longer to prepare. You've got to poach the eggs. You've got to prepare the hollandaise sauce. She made some homemade sourdough English muffins to have. It was fabulous.
Catfish!
I'll even toot my own horn and say that I may have taken 30 or 4 seconds longer to finish breakfast. And at my age, I'm quite proud of that.
Heck yeah, man. Never sell yourself short in that area. That's great.
Well, long story short, the Hawks played amazing and good times were had by all. Then, prior to week two, she went out of town to visit family. She won't be back until the day before the game with the Niners. With the pandemic, she hadn't seen her family in almost 2 years. She's very close to her family and had been looking forward to this trip for a long time. She's been gone on game days before, but that was to go to work and save lives and make a difference in the world. So I always figured that offset any bad chakra.
This was selfish. Yeah.
I always figured that offset any bad chakra there might have been on those rare occasions when breakfast together was skipped. Well, not this time. We all know that eating alone is not nearly as fulfilling as having a dining partner. And now we have real scientific proof. Game one victory. Games two and three.
Catfish!
Losses. What's the common denominator? I think we all know. The Acid Queen was not at game three, so it's not her. Nope, it's clearly my life partner. Fortunately, she's home in a few days. There will be some chakra cleansing happening, and I'm predicting some good things in store for the Niner game. And well, selfishly, even if we lose, I'll be happy for other reasons. Keep up the great work, and thanks for all you do. One final closing comment for Adam. Be strong. Be true to your beliefs. And don't let the Acid Queen get any crazy ideas into your head. Don't cave! Though she sounds like a great person, and I'm glad you are happy and can have the kind of relationship where you can nickname her the Acid Queen to the point where that's how she's referred, at least on the show, go Hawks!
For the record, I didn't make up the nickname, and I have been trying not to perpetuate it, but it seems to be sticking. So that's how that is. But for Michael here, look, there's a lot of ways that couples can have breakfast. And if you're not going to have breakfast, which brings us wins, like because the partner's out of town, I mean, maybe it's time to bring in a pinch hitter, like for, you know, when there's weeks away.
Can you FaceTime breakfast?
FaceTime breakfast? I don't know. I guess there's a visual aspect there. Man, I just think that maybe it's time that, you know, they found somebody else, maybe just, you know, for those off weeks.
Pinch hitters.
Yeah. I'm sure Michael's partner will love this suggestion.
Just throwing things out there, you know.
It's just, I'm just spitballing here. You don't have to take my life advice, but yeah, it's time to open this thing up.
I had to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for every announcer, every member of the national media, everybody who is having a freaking breakfast orgasm over Sean McVay's and Matt Stafford's freaking mind meld and how much they're the best of friends and how they're the greatest duo that's ever been duoed in the history of football now. And oh my gosh, Sean McVay, the genius, finally has his man and they're so great. And they probably
catfish
each other off in the locker room before each game because they're so close, them and Shreg's watches, you know, like I'm just so sick of hearing about this. I mean, it's just, the amount of verbal vomit that comes out during a broadcast with those two out there on the field is just so disgusting. I am so sick of it. I bring Robert Saleh back to the sidelines of the Niners and get rid of this Stafford McVay stuff. Like I would do that. I would go back to watching Robert Saleh headshots every 10 minutes.
Ooh.
If I didn't have to listen to this. Ooh. That's how bad it is. To everybody who can't shut the
catfish
up about Stafford McVay, do better.
Yeah, that's a tough call.
No, it's not. No.
I don't know. I'm happy to have the Robert Saleh flexing out of my life completely.
Oh, I'm not sad about that. I'm just saying, like, if I have to choose a devil, right? Like, I would choose that devil.
I don't know if I can join you there. I'll have to think about that one. This is like Sophie's choice right here.
A little bit.
Both of these situations involve those teams being good.
That's not necessarily true.
You don't think so? Saleh flexing on the sidelines?
Well, he doesn't have to flex. They just show up on the sidelines all the time. So, I mean, even in losses they did. So,
oh, yeah. But the looking at Saleh, it's the flexing that really got to me, though.
Oh, it's the flex bar? It was all of it. Like, it wasn't just the flex. Mm. You're not Terry Crews.
Watch that man flex all the time.
Hey, I'm going to like take the show off the rails here for like 2 seconds, but I owe you an apology. I don't know if I've given it to you yet.
Oh,
I might have.
Okay.
So years ago, we were talking about shows and you're like, dude, you should watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think you'll think it's funny.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember my response, but
catfish.
And I was like, oh, dude, I've seen those previews and Adam Sandberg. Oh, God. I don't think I can handle. There's no way I could handle that. No,
yeah.
Like I'm out. Not into it at all. Not gonna. Can't do it. Won't watch it. Then we started watching a little bit ago, and I'm just gonna say you were right and I was wrong. It's actually quite funny.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, it's a good show.
I'm glad that you turned it around.
Yeah. So I owe you an apology. I should have taken your advice. It was good advice, and I was being a jerk.
I accept your apology. You may have an apology to deliver now to Andy Samberg, calling him Adam Samberg, but you know.
Whatever, dude. I will not apologize for that because you know how many times in my life I've been called Andy?
Really? You get Andy
Three.
A lot?
No, I actually do get Andy a lot.
Yeah.
I get Andy a lot, especially when I was younger.
Well, and hanging out with Andy all the time?
Well, that didn't help. Yeah. I should have had an Andy free existence at that point, but yeah, I definitely
you can't,
got Andy
you can't hang around Andy and then be mad about the fact that you would get called Andy.
But even when he wasn't around, I'd get called Andy.
Okay.
Yeah. So, no, I do not apologize to Adam Sandberg. I don't. That's your name now. It's an upgrade for him.
Well, my do better this week also goes out to some NFL reporting, particularly on Twitter. I saw it at least once, and then I saw it again from at Zach Cox, NESN, Tom Brady's voice is in rough shape. sounds and looks under the weather. So we have, with all the things going in to Brady's return to Foxborough, the fact that his voice sounds a little bit rough, and that might be some reason for hope for fans in that area, as if he's going to come in and do anything but dominate against the Patriots this weekend, is yeah. funny. But then another Twitter reporter, Jeff Howe, saying simply, Tom Brady has a cold in a tweet. So we're reporting not just on his health or his what he's done through the season, but oh, Tom Brady, you know, sounds like he has the sniffles. Sounds like, you know, his voice. He's maybe had a little bit too much coughing. And so he's a little bit raspy, you know, for these reporters going into this game and just pointing out that Tom Brady has a cold. Do better.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that 60% Tom Brady is still beating this Patriots team.
No cold is bringing Tom Brady down to 60%.
No. What, did he play through an ACL all year last year?
He's played through everything.
And we're worried about him having the sniffles coming into this game? I don't think so. I do enjoy the little ESPN teaser for this game coming up with the Adele song in the background. that was enjoyable. Give him credit for that.
Yeah. The hello.
Hello.
Hey, you got me singing once. We're not doing this again.
It's me.
On to Better at Life. My Better at Life this week is for Justin freaking Tucker, the kicker for the Baltimore Ravens, hitting a game-winning 66-yard field goal, doing it against the Detroit Lions. Man, that team has some bad luck when it comes to field goals, but the guy
by Tucker, right? he's gotten them twice.
But yes, breaking an NFL record and doing it in the way that he did, closing out a win and having it go off of the crossbar and through. Justin Tucker, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Look, and this is may or may not be a provable fact, but I believe that he intentionally hit the crossbar and had it pop over just to show that not only can I kick it that far, but I can land it right on the bar and put the proper spin on it so that it goes bloop over the crossbar. I
wouldn't put it past him. That dude is amazing.
That was amazing. And it was fun listening to McAfee talk about it because, you know, being the former punter.
Yeah.
And a fan of the kicking game.
In the ball to foot club.
Kicking game club. Yeah, exactly. And just, it was fun. That was a really fun moment. And not that I don't really care for the Ravens, so I don't enjoy seeing them win, but man, he's a hell of a talent.
I did have some enjoyment watching the Lions fans, you know, putting their hands up in the air in celebration and then watching those hands go to the forehead as they watch the ball go over the crossbar.
Yeah, maybe if you're a Lions fan, you got to do that. Catfish! In reverse. Just like put your hands on your face first, because that's usually what is the result for you guys. And then when it happens, good, put your hands up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who you got this week?
My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for the birds. All the birds, especially the birds in Australia. Because recently, one of Google's sister's companies down there in Australia has taken to doing drone deliveries. And it's not going well. Because the birds are not having this
catfish.
There, no, this is our airways. You're going to get this crap out of here. You don't need your Amazon Prime right now through via air. Nope, this is not happening. We are taking you down. Quit spying on us in your surveillance state of Australia. And the birds are to the rescue. They have come and they said it's been multiple drones that have been attacked by large birds, and they're just knocking them out of the air. And so they're going to suspend doing it for a while until they figure out what to do about the birds, which is going to be nothing, because there's nothing you can do against a flying raptor attacking you. Like, you're just kind of screwed. So to all the birds in Australia, you guys better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, Amazon's going to find a way. They're going to find a way to equip the drones with some kind of technology to ward off birds so they can make their deliveries.
If they do that, they better start coming up with the technology to make those drones allergic to bullets. Like, because I promise you, some unknown drone flies over my cabin, I'm in Montana. That's what we do. There, every political ad ever has a senator or a congressman shooting a drone out of the sky. It's what we do.
I don't know. You might be able to get your packages a lot faster up the gulch.
Not worth it.
Via drone.
Not worth it.
Hey, this is kind of a weird thing because from the research that I've been doing, you know, I researched the flat earth stuff a little bit back in the day just to see what it was all about. But some of the latest research I've been doing, thanks to an article from my brother, the birds, there's no such thing as real birds anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You didn't know this?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. They got rid of them back in the early 2000s and replaced the actual birds with drone birds. Like
they did that?
They did.
Wow. They is amazing. They do all sorts of stuff that you just wouldn't believe. Because I'd heard a similar tale back in it was right about that same time, late 90s, early 2000s, as an old German dude had come into the photo lab named Klaus. And Klaus was definitely convinced that all the squirrels were not real squirrels. They were government spy robots.
Yeah.
That like crawled all over and monitored your actions.
Okay. Maybe it was the squirrels and then that didn't work well enough. So they went with the squirrels must have been the temporary technology before they could really go airborne with the birds.
There we go.
Because the birds was definitely more late aughts, early teens.
Okay.
Is when the birds were replaced.
So this is all the birds, right? So like the small birds and the big birds and all the birds.
Yeah.
That's a lot of R&D. That's a lot of R&D to get it to work on all the scales. And not only that, but the hummingbirds too. Like they're like basically helicopters. So like they figured that out too.
You got to replace them all.
Wow.
Can't have any organic birds flying around anymore.
Dude, they are amazing engineers.
Yes, they are. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
The real Hawks, not the drone Hawks.
Yeah, right. Real Hawks. They better get us a win this week.